Well, for the 2025 PGA Tour, it all comes down to one final tournament. And for Musings on Golf, there is no one better than Rich Lerner of Golf Channel to guide us through the Tour Championship and give us incredible insight into the game he knows and loves. On behalf of our executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you to another storytelling rich episode of Musings on Golf, and are you ever in for a real treat? Much like Scottie Scheffler produces dramatic moments, such as his 82-foot chip shot for birdie in the final round to clinch the BMW Championship on Sunday, Rich Lerner has produced great content week after week over nearly 30 years at Golf Channel. Let me tell you something, folks. Rich has a lot to say about Scheffler, and you'll also hear from Scottie after that interview with Rich. We're also going to play a clip from an interview that my late co-host Bob Bupka conducted with another Ryder Cup captain about his thoughts on playing in the event. Obviously, so much discussion about, well, should Keegan Bradley pick himself? I think you'll really enjoy this from a few years ago when Bob talked to another very well-known player and Ryder Cup captain. On the backside of the interview with Rich, I'll have a few thoughts on what was really, I thought, a very cool U.S. amateur being played out west at the Olympic Club in San Francisco, youth truly being served up both with the two winners, and also very cool to see John Daly's son playing well. Okay, Rich Lerner, gosh, you know, I Rich and I share a few things in common. Both of us very much grew up in the game. Myself, with my father being a golf professional, Rich, as you'll find out, his dad, Les, owned a very popular and very busy miniature golf course and driving range in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where Rich grew up. Just some great stories from Rich on that. His relationship, Rich's, with Arnold Palmer, because Rich went to work at Golf Channel just to really a short time after Mr. Palmer was one of the co-founders of Golf Channel, and he got to know Arnold extremely well. And you'll hear a lot of those very sweet and very special stories about that relationship and just about who Mr. Palmer was, maybe some sides of Arnold that you didn't know and kind of goes back to his roots, Mr. Palmer's roots in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Rich has some very definite thoughts on Keegan Bradley and on the Ryder Cup and on Keegan's decision as to whether to play himself and frankly who he should be picking to round out his 12-man team. Half the team has been decided by a points list, and this final event at the Tour Championship will, I think, go a long way, at least in Keegan's mind, in determining who the other six players are. Okay. We've had a lot of great interviews here on Musings on Golf. This one with Rich Lerner is absolutely right up there with all of those fabulous interviews. And you're going to hear it right after these words from our corporate partners and friends at William & Harry and Titleist. Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup and to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% waterproof, and all-day comfort from tee to green and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with the wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Well, wherever and whenever a big event in golf is being held, our special guest today is sure to be on site, leading the way for the talented team at Golf Channel, with heading into and coming out of the action since 1997, for goodness sakes. He's been a fixture at the channel, and he'll be front and center once again this week at the Tour Championship. What a treat, both personally and professionally, to welcome Rich Lerner to Musings on Golf. Hey, Rich, you got a front row seat for that Scotty Scheffler train. It's roaring down the track, isn't it?
It is, from Baltimore to Atlanta. And you had to add in that wonderful intro, Kelly, for goodness sakes. Next year will be 30 years. I came out of the analog era, and I am still struggling to be fully digitized. But in any event, what a treat.
We'll get to all that.
Yes, what a treat to watch Scotty Scheffler. I mean, he is on a tear. And I don't think there's anybody stopping him. He has clarity. He has purpose. He doesn't have a weakness in his game. He has all sorts of confidence. He doesn't overcomplicate the sport. He has the ability to adapt to golf courses. He has the ability to self-correct in a way that I don't think other players do. He owns his golf swing, and he is on his way to doing some historic things. I mean, 18 wins now, that's tied with Julius Boros and Nick Price. And next up, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Kite, and Ernie Els, and keep going. I think he's going to run down a lot of the biggest names in the history of the sport.
Rich, I know that you've said it before, that when it comes to comparisons to Tiger, it can be a little bit tricky, right?
Yeah.
Because Tiger was at such an absurd level. But we forget maybe that all of what Scotty Scheffler's done has been just in the last 3.5 years. It's been rather remarkable.
There are some ways to make comparisons, but I would point to what Scotty said on our set Sunday night after he won the BMW. He said, essentially, I'm paraphrasing here, there's only one Tiger Woods. I think we all know that. He was a once in a 100-year player. But if you want to play this game, we can. Scotty's now won 18 tournaments. The first was 2022. It's not that long ago. That was the WM Phoenix Open. So from that point to now, 18 wins in 78 starts. That's a 23% clip. For Tiger's career, he won 22 and change. What's the context there? How do you make sense of that? You can make the World Golf Hall of Fame by winning about 3% of your career starts. If you've had a 20 to 25 year run, Davis Love, for example, Freddie Couples, for his career, 15 wins is slightly less than 3%. Those two are in the Hall of Fame. Another way to try to understand this is to say, very simply, you play 20 tournaments a year for 20 years. It's 400 tournaments. If you've won, say, 4% of your career starts, that's 16 wins. If one of those is a major, hello, you're in the Hall of Fame. So let's backtrack. So if 3 to 4% is Hall of Fame, what in the world is 22%? That's where Tiger's at. You're a 450 lifetime hitter, and you've won, Cy Youngs, and you've done like Otani. You've done it all, and you've won world championships. So we're only at a four-year period here for Scotty Scheffler. So let's go break this down just a little bit more to back up this comparison. 12 wins in the last 2 years combined for Scotty, 7 last year and 5. And I'm not including the Olympic gold and the Hero World Championship. Tiger had a 2-year stretch where he won 15 in 06 and 07. You want to look for 4-year comps or a similar number of tournament starts. Scotty at 78, Tiger played 75 tournaments from 05 through 09, and he won 31. 31 of 75. That's 41%. So right there, you can say, hold on a second. Tiger was in his own league, but Scotty is getting there, and Scotty is just running roughshod over everyone. I don't see anybody out there, you know, maybe week to week. He doesn't win them all, obviously, but no one at, you know, this consistently strong as Scotty has been.
Rich, you mentioned Shohei Ohtani, so I do think it's fair, at least when you stack Scheffler up against the current superstars, Ohtani, Patrick Mahomes, etc. Rich, he's got to be right
No
there.
question. There's no question. We are watching one of the greatest athletes in the world today. If there was, where are we? We're in August. We still have, you know, months to go here. But sports person of the year, if you want to break male and female, but sportsman of the year, he has to be in the conversation. I would think. But he is there with Ohtani and Max Verstappen and Simone Biles and Patrick Mahomes and Saquon Barkley. And I'll still put LeBron James in that category, even at the age of 40. I think he's still one of the 10 best players in the NBA. Sydney McLaughlin, track and field. I think with Scottie, he was so sort of unassuming that people didn't latch on. And we always felt that with Scottie, because he wasn't, you know, as my friend Eamon Lynch likes to say, digitizing every moment of his life, because he's not yachting on the Mediterranean, letting everybody know how wonderful his life is, because he's not showing up on the red carpet at the Met Gala. You know, people weren't tuned in the way they seem to be tuned in on social media. Scotty was doing it the old-fashioned way. He was just winning. And there was this sense in the sport. There was dialogue a year or two ago that, you know, maybe Scotty's not dynamic enough to carry the sport. And so at that point, we were saying, well, he's going to have to do it the old-fashioned way, which is to just win through sheer greatness. So, and absent any of this sort of, you know, buzzy, you know, sugar-induced, you know, highs that people get from modern celebrities and celebrity athletes, we're left with Scotty to just admire the craft, admire what he's doing on the field of play. And now it's happening, because after he chipped in at 17 at Cage Valley, boom, here goes the social media post from Patrick Mahomes. Here comes LeBron James with a social media post. People are starting to get it. And frankly, I think everybody is sort of also on board with the idea that this is refreshing. This is just, I've been sort of, you know, in a fun way, comparing him to the lead character in 300, that movie. He's Leonidas. He is the humble warrior with a swarthy beard who, you know, spills it all and then goes home to his beautiful family. It's nice to see. And I think maybe there's something here. If you want to look at, you know, a model, you know, he is a good role model, no question, but this sort of longevity through balance. And Ted Scott has said there's no secret recipe, there's no secret formula with Scotty. This is someone who just works hard, and is a gamer. He loves the moment. And Scotty on our set on Sunday night said, you know, look, people misinterpreted my comments at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush, you know, as if I didn't care about winning. That's not it at all. It's just that I'm able to compartmentalize. So when I'm home, I'm home. He works hard, he practices. But when he's inside the ropes, he said, for those 5 hours, he's present. And I think that's the big, probably the biggest issue that most players have is staying present within that 5 hour window, staying positive. And Scotty seems to have mastered that.
He certainly has. And I like that word, compartmentalize. And Rich, that's tough to do, right? That in the modern world we live in, to have really for him a very focused life at home, and then to be able to somewhat, you know, set that aside when he's on the golf
And
course and vice versa.
I would add one other aspect to this. You know, Scotty I think views this not just as a competition, but as a calling. He's used that word. I've been called the phrase. I've been called to do this. So
What do you
there's
think he
sort
means
of
by
a,
that?
well, there's you know some spirituality in that. You know, it's no secret that Scotty is devout. Now he's not. You know, there are plenty of people in athletics who are devout. I think my view of this is that you know for Scotty it's not. It doesn't seem to be a redemption play, you know, where, you know, I messed up and now I've found the answers. I think he, you know, he just had this wonderful upbringing. He has a sort of a softer side. I don't, you know, I don't think he has sort of like a traditional view of what it means to be a man. His father, Scott, you see Scott and Diane, mom and dad, at a lot of these tournaments, Scott stayed at home. And Mom Diane was COO of prestigious law firms. And it wasn't all about Scott growing up in that household. He has three sisters. So, you know, he didn't have this sort of archetypal male role model. He's kind of like, you know, you have to, you know, kill what you eat. There is a little, you know, sort of softness to it. But Scotty's, you know, talked about, and this goes as far back as that, you know, sort of now famous press conference where he revealed that before the final round of the Masters in 2022, he cried with Meredith because he didn't know if he could handle not just that day, but what would be coming with the green jacket should he go on to win, which he did. And Meredith said to him, who are we to say? You know, in other words, it's out of our hands. You know, let go and let the higher power do what it would do. So I think there's a perception with people of great conviction and their beliefs that because they've let go, because they're sort of not in control, that they're sort of placid. They're like, well, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I think that's a misinterpretation. I mean, Scotty burns to win. He's just not going to be consumed by it. So I think it's really, you know, combined with all the talent, he has that part of it in order. He, you know, this spiritual side, this idea that golf is, I'm backtrack a second. I shared this on Sunday night with Scotty, and I've shared this before. I spoke to his mom at the BMW at Castle Pines in 2024. Wonderful person, as his dad. I said, please, Diane, help us understand why your son is so successful beyond strokes gain. Branel and I, we're all out of the strokes gain. But there's not much more we can say. Everybody knows that he is a superior ball striker. And she said very simply, Scotty is not his score. So, think about that for just a little bit. And so, you know, anybody who's played this game at the highest levels would understand what can happen, that you can get wrapped up. Your identity can get wrapped up in your scores. And the game can, this game, I would say it's a brooding game. You have so much time between shots and between rounds, long stretches on the road. You have all this time to think about what's happening. And if it's going sideways, you know, people can get really negative and they begin to think they're never going to get out of it. And I've seen the game weigh good people down over the years. It's just the nature of it. And Scotty seems to have found the sweet spot, which is just as important as anything you might do technically with your golf swing, is how am I going to be, how am I going to be in this game day to day, this game that can be so brutal? How am I going to conduct my affairs, myself, within that construct? And I think Scotty has a very, obviously, very healthy approach at the moment.
And, you know, you mentioned all of that. And his playing partner in the final round at the Open Championship, Ao Tung Lee. I mean, it's a little thing, But he talked about how much Lee did, how much he enjoyed playing with Scheffler. And they were laughing. It was very comfortable. And to your point about Scotty is not his score in the intense moment of trying to win a major championship, he kind of showed a side that, at least with his playing companion there, of being, again, a very likable, if not easygoing guy at times.
Yeah. Scotty's present. And yeah, he checks all the boxes. He's polite. He's not perfect. You know, I mean, Scotty's gone through spells out there where he's banged clubs and he's moaned about a shot or two, but very, very few are able to, sort of walk through this sport without, some demonstration of just how frustrating it can be.
Right. Rich Lerner joining us here on Musings on Golf. And Rich, I want to get into a lot on your personal side. But before we do, as we go to the Tour Championship this week, for the first time in a while, the number one seed, in this case, Scheffler, does not have the advantage, does not have the strokes gained starting. Do you like that personally? Do you think that's good for the event?
I do. I mean, why did they give him strokes gained advantages in the past to try to sort of, reward season long excellence? Another way to look at it would be to how do you give Scotty the equivalent of a home field advantage? And it was to give him this 2-stroke lead on the next closest guy. Might have been as much as 7 going all the way down to the bottom at number 30. It's convoluted. It's not a great way to run a tournament. Yeah. People tune in. Well, wait a minute. Scotty didn't shoot the lowest score this week, but he wins. Explain that to me. And nobody really liked it, even if there was a little bit of logic to it. So what's the equivalent of the home field advantage now? That $25 million FedEx bonus, remember that?
Yes.
They're now spreading that out. So for having been the best player in the regular season, Scotty received $10 million. For being number one in the FedEx Cup points after the BMW Championship, another 5. So he's $15 million in his pocket already. There's your home field advantage.
It's a very nice home field advantage.
It's a nice sized home at $15 million. And now the remaining 10 is up for grabs. Pure sprint to the $10 million first prize, biggest prize in the history of the tour. It's $40 million total. And all 30 have a crack at it. They start from even par. And that's just better. And now we might get, we might get a long shot. It's unlikely, but a Jacob Bridgman could be the Cinderella story. And previously, you really, realistically, like, 3, 4, 5 guys had a chance to win it. Now all 30, you would think are not going to be handicapped. And I'm okay with it because doing a lot of hand wringing through the years. Oh, well, how do we make this like playoffs in other sports? It's not. Right. Our Super Bowl is in April. It's at the Masters, or
very good.
We could argue it's U.S. Open or the Open. That's it. So stop trying to be like other sports. This is just a good tournament with a great field, maybe a great tournament. And big picture, I've always said, since I was a kid growing up in a golf family, and we'll get to that in a little bit. My mom would always say, put the golf on a Saturday, the golf. She never said, put Curtis Strange on, put Lanny Watkins on. She loved those players. She said, put the golf on. And every weekend, for as long as I can remember, the golf is on. And, it was Wylie, and then it was the Bob Hope in Palm Springs, that was up to Pebble Beach, that it was down at Doral, and to West Palm Beach, and then go north. The golf. It only changed when Tiger came along. Then it was put Tiger on, or is right. Tiger on? My point here is the golf's going to be on this weekend. Will it mean as much as the Masters? No, but could it be great? Yes, Memphis with Justin Rose and J.J. Spaun was great. Scottie Scheffler against Bob McIntyre with a chip in at 17 at Caves Valley was pretty darn good. So add, and I know they don't like to talk about money, but add this elevated purse, the possibility of a long shot, and Scotty's continued dominance, and can anybody challenge him? I'm going to watch the golf this weekend. I'm going to be covering the golf, but
Right, exactly.
I'm going to watch the golf, and I know a lot of my buddies are too.
You mentioned about your mom. Let's watch the golf. So let's talk about growing up. Your dad, Les, owned a driving range in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where he grew up, as well as a miniature golf course. What was that like growing up? You worked it. Yeah, I was sure you got to know the business well. I would imagine just so many great memories.
I can't imagine a better summer job than what we had in the 1970s. Backtrack. My father, rest in peace, came out of the University of Pennsylvania, the Wharton School. He served in the Navy, World War II, the tail end. Goes to work for his father, and small department store in a little industrial town north of Allentown. Allentown's starting to grow. A lot of those cities, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, and keep going, Reading West, starting to mushroom a little bit post World War II. And my dad and some of his buddies were coming back from playing golf. They were, 10, 11, 15, 20 handicaps. My dad was a decent player at about a 10. They were playing up in the Poconos. They see a little par three course on their way back called McGargles, and they all started their late 20s. They all started scheming, boy, this would be great in Allentown. Anyway, long story short, they come up with the money, and I could only imagine as they went and asked their fathers to sign the banknotes for, I think it was 40 grand a piece. What their immigrant fathers who came through Ellis Island must have thought: you want to do what with this money? What is miniature golf? What is a driving range? Because that generation, I'm talking about my grandfather, that generation only knew from work, 16 hours a day. Anyway, it was in late 50s, Arnold Palmer's Ascendant. My dad, being a sharp business guy and an entrepreneur, thought, I'm gonna see if I can get Arnold Palmer's name on this new enterprise. And if everything goes well, we will have a string of Arnold Palmer golf centers across the United States. It's a good idea, isn't it, Kelly?
Yes, on the surface.
So we know, was Arnold a pretty good businessman in his own right?
Yes, he was.
He was. So when my father found out, and I don't know the exact number, when my father found out Arnold's asking price to lend his name, image, and likeness to the new venture, Dorneyville Golf Center was born. It was named for the little borough on the edge of the expanding city of Allentown. So we never did get Arnold's name on the driving range, but years later, in a wonderful twist, Les Lerner's kid goes to work for Arnold Palmer's network, co-founded with the great Joe Gibbs. And soon after my father passed in 2013, my wife and I had been doing for a long time a charity event in Orlando with a lot of pros. And we used to do Sunday night at Bay Hill, 200 people, big charity gala fundraiser for the Winnie Palmer Hospitals for Women and Children. And I'm up there with Arnold doing a Q&A. And he calls my mom up, and I don't know what he's going to do. And he presented our family with a plaque with my dad's name on it in honor of our family for the work we had done for the hospital. So my dad never got Arnold's name on the driving range all those years ago. Fast forward, my dad's name, family's name is in the hospital in Orlando outside one of the neonatal units. So it's a hell of a journey in the game. Growing up at that driving range, we had 30 stall driving range with the green dividers. We had a practice putting green flat. We had 18 holes of pitch and putt fully lighted. I give my dad a ton of credit, though he wasn't, a low handicap player. He hired a shaper from a nearby town. A guy came out on a bulldozer, and I don't know that my dad ever fully understood what a great par three he laid out. I can remember every single hole. and it was phenomenal from maybe 40 yards to 105. And then we had a miniature golf. We had a pinball room and a driving range. So back in the day, I don't know, a little before we had Galaga, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong. Any of those names ring a
Sure,
bell?
as they do.
My dad used to call it a captive audience. So when you had people on the grounds and waiting, and we
Yes.
eventually became very successful. It was an institution in the Lehigh Valley, working class. We had Mack trucks, Bethlehem Steel, and you'd come out with their families, and you could play. A kid could play miniature golf for $1.50. You could get a small basket of balls for $1.50. You could play pitch and putt for $5. This was another time. So we would sometimes on a beautiful night in June or July, we might have a 90-minute waiting line. We used to give people tickets, and my dad called that the captive audience. Get them spending money, hot dogs, pinballs, sodas. And I worked there with three brothers, my three brothers and I, a bunch of my friends. And obviously the jobs ranged. Behind the counter. If you were behind the counter, it was an old-fashioned cash register. And by the way, we punched in with the old card in the punch clock. Whatever we were making, I don't know, it was $4 an hour. I don't remember back then, but whatever it was a lot of money for a teenage kid, 15, 16 years old. So if you were working the register, that was like being a bartender on a busy night. You were like a bartender at a crowded Manhattan nightclub. You were jamming. And then somebody had to pick the balls. That was a great job, obviously. You get on the little golf cart with the chicken wire fence, chicken wire around it, and then the picker on the back. And if you went across the 100-yard sign, and it was filled up, you had 30 hitters. I'm telling you, all 30 stopped and positioned their bodies and started. I mean, they would break out the alignment sticks and aimed for you in the tractor. And when they hit you, I mean, I mean, it was incoming. You were just getting drilled. And when they hit you, they celebrated like they'd made a hole in one at 17 at Sawgrass. It was like the greatest shot they've ever hit.
Exactly.
As it got later into the evening. And you might have had five, six guys at 11 o'clock at night. We didn't have two handicaps at that point. I would be down on the patio, and I'd look up, and I'd say, "I think those guys are hitting balls at the supermarket across the street right now." And so we'd have to send our crack security guard Lou, who was on loan from the local prison on a work release program. It's a true story. We had Lou would say, "Rich, you want me to go up there and crack him over the head with a 9-iron?" And I would say, "Lou, easy, easy. Just go up and show yourself and let him know that the driving range is over there, not over there." What can I tell you? I mean, it was special. We had a You know, the central figure, and I write about this, and I hope you'll have me back on next year. I write about all of this in a book that I just finished. It comes out next May. The central figure was the foul-mouthed old pro, who was our Yoda. He dispensed all of the wisdom that no priest or rabbi or teacher or mother or father would dare dispense about the real world. He was in his mid-60s. He smoked an unfiltered Camel, he worked in a battery plant by night, and he hustled $5 lessons by day. His name was Frank Stocky. He had an enormous impact on a lot of us, and it was an odd, it was an odd dynamic. He was a hard drinker, a gambler, but he was a figure that we'd not encountered in our suburban upbringing, and so lots of funny stories there, many of which I can't share here because they're just too off color. But in the book, they're all going to be in the book. So anyway, very special place. And to wrap this up. We had it in the family for 35 years, and the state bought the land, and they leased it back to my father and his partner for about a decade until the state decided what they wanted to do with it, which was to build a road. And again, that whole part of the Lehigh Valley was expanding. So eventually in the early 90s, they had to let go of it. They did build a road, and today it's like any other homogenized strip of what I call Amazon America, where locals dine. And there's a Carrabba's and a Dunkin' Donuts and I think an Office Depot or whatever they put in these little strip malls or clusters. But I like to say we were Topgolf, long before that came along. It was loose. We had a lot of action. You can imagine with teenage boys, relatively unsupervised, and I worked there until my early 20s, even through college, because it was just such a good job. It was a happening. It was quite the spot.
There's a great James Taylor song called Copper Line, where he talks about the area that he grew up in. And then eventually said they tore it all up and put up just like you were talking about. But those memories never go away, Rich, right?
How could you? I'll give you an image that you never forget. So we look back and we wonder, how the hell did we never get robbed at gunpoint? We got clipped. There's a difference between getting clipped and getting robbed. Clipped is in a cash business. This was cold, hard cash. There were no credit cards, man, back then. That cash register was pinging over and over again. And my dad always felt that he wanted during the daytime when the boys were might've been at a baseball camp or basketball camp. He wanted a responsible grown-up behind the register. Somebody's got to be watching the store. My dad always said that he hated to see, cigarette butts. If he walked out, my dad used to be, big into these surprise visits. And almost every time he walked in, we were playing pinball. Where we were sitting on our ass,
right.
I pissed them off. It was great. But to this day, Kelly, wherever I am, if I see like a napkin or especially at work or something, I pick it up just out of habit. That's what my father instilled in me. Back to getting clipped. So we consistently, money leaked out just because it was so easy. And we had to let go of a number of trusted older gentlemen who had a way of doing a forensic deep dive to figure out whether we were getting cheated or not. Anyway, but getting robbed is a little bit different. At the end of a humming busy night, we had the old fashioned sacks of money, like the white bank bags.
Literally, you loaded everything in there.
We had to put the cash and the coins and everything in there. Right. 12:31 in the morning and walk out. And we would take it home. And my dad, man, he could smell that money like a lion on the meat. And he would come out from the long hallway back bedroom. And here he comes, and he's got the Hanes t-shirt, and he's got the jockey shorts with the left Titleist sticking out, and that's an image you don't forget. And then we'd hand him the money, and he would say, "What'd we do?" And all I would say was, "We had a big night, Pop." And he would say, "Good." And he turned around and he went upstairs to his little office and shut the door. And the counting began. and then we would do it all over again the next day. If you talk to any of the guys that worked there, my brothers or any of our friends that worked there, just they'll instantly click in and tell you it was the sweetest, best time. And we were really lucky. I mean, we could. Hell, I could ride my bike to work, and I had all the golf balls I wanted to hit. I should have been playing professionally for all the balls that I had to hit, but I played a lot of pinball too, and was a bit wayward as a lad.
Rich, they were the summer nights of your life, right?
They absolutely were, and I do remember, Frank, the old pro. He was the best teacher of beginners I've ever seen, still to this day. He basically would put somebody who never played golf, he would put them in the follow-through position. That's how he started his lessons. He would take their back, if they're righty, their back foot, and put it on the toe the way you do, and right, just like this, club on the shoulder, facing the target. And he would step away, he would take a drag of that cigarette, and he would say, "Now get there." And people would say, "What about the backswing?" He said, "Get there," meaning get to that follow-through spot. And man, I saw people just boom. So they weren't worried about the backswing;
Yes.
they just were trying to get there. And I once went up. I had a junior tournament. And I was tied in knots, and I said, "Frank, come on, I need you." And we go up to the range, and I start. All my friends know me as a massive head case. Way too many thoughts in my head, and so I go. I'm maybe 16, and I'm spewing the bullshit. "Frank, my swing plane. I didn't know a swing plane from an airplane, and my spine angle, and I'm going to take it back." And I'm
Right.
babbling just a torrent of golf babble for about a minute. And Frank hit the fucking ball already. Hit the
Yes.
blanking ball already, will you? And that's a great lesson, by the way. Hit freaking ball already. Anyway, great memories. All will be in the book coming out next
You
year
have a
with a lot of
working
other
title for
stuff.
the book?
It's not locked, but it might be Dog Legs and Detours.
I like that.
So it is not just about my childhood. It's Tiger's a central figure. I chronicle Tiger's rise, his fall, his comeback. Lots of wonderful stories about Jack and Arnold, and keep going. Modern players. I chronicle the 2025 Masters in depth. There's Bryson, there's Scottie, there's Jon Rahm, Jordan Spieth, but there's some other wonderful twisting, winding stories. Samuel L. Jackson, Matthew McConaughey, Bill Murray, Will Ferrell. I had an incredible encounter with Will Ferrell. We'll leave all of that a surprise, and we'll come back early next year if you'll have me. But lots of sort of detours and dog legs. The through line would be my dad, Arnold, Tiger, and just my what is it now? It's like 50 years in the game from my dad's driving range until now.
Rich shares fabulous stories about Arnold Palmer. Plus, we have plenty of Ryder Cup talk right after this exciting news from William and Harry. Introducing the limited edition spirit shoe from William and Harry, crafted to celebrate the magic of the Ryder Cup and the fans who carry the spirit of Team USA. Premium deerskin, hybrid spikeless outsole, 100% waterproof, effortless comfort on course and beyond. A limited production release for those who appreciate the difference between beautiful and exceptional. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort. We're winding down to the late in the back nine with Rich Lerner of Golf Channel. Rich, you've mentioned Mr. Palmer several times, and I know that when Arnold passed, you and many others had very emotional tributes to him. How do you put into words, Rich Lerner, how do you describe a relationship with a man who, as many have said, walked among stars, but always was just that guy from Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and the way he treated so many people?
Remember at the memorial service in Latrobe, one of his neighbors said to me something that I'll never forget. Very simply, so much in life made Arnold smile. There's 100 ways I could answer this. The greatest golf trip I've ever taken in my life was one in which I didn't hit a single shot. I didn't even bring my clubs. I believe it was 2013 thereabouts. I went to Latrobe with a camera crew and filmed what became about a 10-minute feature story on Arnold in his warehouse with all of his memorabilia. 10,000 golf clubs, the Fortson tractor, the Pennzoil tractor, the shoes, the mementos, the knickknacks that, you know, any famous person would pick up, lifetime of being a star. And so this is like one small little moment. And I think it's telling as to who Arnold was, you know, this kind of man of the people. So we're just, you know, working our way through the warehouse. And I noticed a bowling ball. Being from Pennsylvania, I understand the importance of bowling and bowling leagues and, you know, a rolling rock or a Schlitz or whatever, or Schaefer beer at a plant in near Allentown, out where Arnie's from, it would be rolling rock. You know, a Tuesday night or a Thursday night bowling league. And so I stopped with the crew and I said, Arnie, did you bowl? And he lit up and he said, oh yeah. Yeah. I was in a league. And of course I asked him, what's your best, you know, best game ever? He said 280. He's very proud of that. So what did that tell me is that when Arnie came off the road, you know, it was a different time. He was with his pals in Latrobe, like anybody else, at a bowling alley, just, you know, having a night. I'll give you another sort of anecdote. It's very small, but this is under the heading that he had this immense presence, but he was present in small ways. I was at the We Met Foundation banquet, so just a great event in Boston, like 1,800 people. It was Mark Frost, wrote Greatest Game Ever Played. Bill yes. Paxton, who starred in it, Peter Jacobson, Arnold, and me. And we were at a table, and you know, I mean, it was roped off, and there was a line of people that wanted Arnold to sign. They might have had a flag or a hat, whatever it was, and there was a security person there, and it very easily could have said, "Hey, this is off limits." And I'll never forget, I was sitting right next to Arnie, and he did this for an hour, pointing to the security person, "Send it up. I'll sign it." They're plating the salads now. I am, you know, inconsequential at this point. You know, this is, I'm getting ready and I'm looking around like, you know, I'm looking for the salad dressing. Can't see it. Can't find it. Arnold's signing. He's engaging people. He got a bunch of things going, and he reaches around there was a flower plate setting in the middle, and lo and behold, right in front of me is the salad dressing. Doesn't say where, and he pats my arm like this. He always used to, I always loved that. He was like a father, grandfather figure to me. Always, you know, when we had a conversation, if he wanted to make a point, he'd put his thick mitts right on my forearm. Right. So I was just like, it was a small thing. And, you know, he was the, you know, he was a man's man. He was an alpha male. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was the alpha male around whom you felt really comfortable. Like, he never made you feel small in any way. And I think the magic of Arnold, as it relates to kind of his public persona and the way everybody perceived him, the way he interacted with people, was he loved being Arnold. Like, mm-hmm. he genuinely loved being out with fans. And that's not always the case, because it's uncomfortable to be watched all the time. You know, I mean, I think stars, athletes, people, you know, actors and musicians, I think they struggle with that. But Arnold, it was so natural to him. And he would, you know, he looked people in the eye as if maybe he knew them, or maybe he met your uncle. I don't know. There was always that little moment where he made a connection. He took his time in the way he signed. That's, you know, famous, that beautiful, beautiful signature. Loved the golf swing too. That, you know, Tasmanian devil finish, corkscrew finish. I mean, what you talk about, American original. Arnold was an American original. And I give you have time for one more story.
Please.
About this humility that we all sensed in Arnold. In the warehouse, we come to the end of the shoot and I see canisters of film, silver canisters, old fashioned, and they had tape with black markings on it. And Odo have had a projector. 1958 Masters. On top of that was 1960 US Open, 1962 Masters, 64 Masters. And at the very top was the one that, kind of caught my eye, was 1965 Tournament of Roses. I said, Arnold, what's that? He said, well, I was a Grand Marshal in Tournament of Roses Parade, 1965. And if you were the Grand Marshal, in the 1960s, when, I mean, there were, it was huge, the Rose Bowl parade and the Rose Bowl itself. That was Walt Disney, would have been a Grand Marshal, people of that ilk, astronauts, whatever. And now it's Arnold, who's sort of at, the height of his powers, height of his popularity. So he tells me this story. He says, you want to hear a story? I said, of course. He says, I'm on the convertible with Winnie on the parade route. My dad, Deke, is following on foot behind us. We get to the end of the parade route and we veer off. And behind us, the state troopers come in with the ropes to cordon it off. I turned around and I yelled at the state troopers, pointing at my father, hey, he's with me. Let him in. Okay, fair enough. Arnold says that later, his dad, who was a very tough guy, had polio as a child. Arnold told me that Deke could do 15 one-arm pull-ups. That's how strong he was. One arm. I mean, we're talking old world, not old school, but old world. So parade route, parade's done. Deke gets in Arnold's face and he says, don't you ever pull that again. We are no one, we are no better than anybody else. Don't ever do that again. There's that humility. You're not better than the next guy. And then Arnold added, after he won the Open at Birkdale in the early 60s, he came back to La Trobe a hero, and there was a big party at the club. And Arnold's the toast of the town. And his father came up to him. And this was the era where I don't, dads didn't do a lot of hugging then. It was, son, you did well. Congratulations. Now the back nine needs to be cut. He's won the Open. He's a global star. And Arnold said, I got on that damn tractor and cut the grass at La Trobe Country Club as, and it always a reminder to stay rooted,
Yes.
to stay rooted. And for Arnold, that was La Trobe. That was everything that his father instilled in him. And that's, the end result was what we were fortunate to have seen and experienced for all of those years.
Rich, a quick story, if I may, along the lines of Deacon, his father, and Arnold. 2014 PGA of America annual meeting, and Arnold was honored with the as the first recipient of the Deacon Palmer Award, which is a new award the PGA put in place. Deacon was born with a club foot, and so it was an award that the PGA of America started to for a PGA professional who had overcome a physical limitation from birth, et cetera, and gone on to do great things. And it's been a wonderful award over the last decade or so. But the first year, Arnold was the recipient. And my dad, Max Elbin, grew up in Cumberland, Maryland, went on to become the president of the PGA of America in the late 60s, and he and Arnold were very good friends. And so I saw Arnold in the green room there at the hotel in Indianapolis, and just went up to him and said, hi, Mr. Palmer, it's Kelly Elbin. And without hesitation, Rich, he looks at me and he says, Kelly, last time I saw you were knee high to your dad. And I tell people that story
Yeah. Wonderful.
that was Arnold Palmer.
Yeah.
And a lot of Rich, so many people have that kind of story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The end of that day at Latrobe, where I was in the warehouse with the camera crew. So a few days before Christmas, and there were a couple of inches of snow on the ground. And remember, we're in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, sort of a small town. And we go to the men's grill in the clubhouse at Latrobe. Suits finished. Arnold was really generous with his time, probably spent two to 3 hours with film crew. And now we're in the men's grill. And he's got three of his buddies. They're all younger. They're in their 50s. These are his guys. And
Sure.
a couple of drinks. And Arnold puts on his beautiful long tan winter coat. And he takes a couple of steps up to leave. And he turns around and he says to his buddies, "Hey boys, if there's anything going on tonight, give me a call." I'm like, "What the hell's going on? You're 80, 81. We're in Latrobe. There are 3 inches of snow on the ground. What the hell's going on tonight? I want in." Whatever. He was
Whatever it is.
a man of the people. He was a man of maximum action. And he was a man of the game. I think we can end it by saying, a line that I've used is that he was known as the king, but he was the best friend the game of golf has ever had.
Rich, two final questions, real quick. Thoughts, the six first six have been determined for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. The captain's picks will be made over the next weeks, and the rest of the teams will be filled out.
Tough
Obviously,
call.
huge home field advantage for the U.S. because of Bethpage Black and
Look,
so forth. Do you have any feelings initially going into the Ryder Cup?
they might have to lean into some youth here. I mean, they're just I don't know what other options he's going to have. And I mean, Maverick McNealy and Ben Griffin. And I have to say, Ben Griffin showed all of us, some guts in that final round of the BMW Championship. I'm sure it was not lost on Keegan Bradley. He's a kid with a lot of moxie. He had bad reaction to some creatine he had taken. And he played the first three holes in six over par on Sunday final round. Remember, he's never been to a Ryder Cup. He's trying to make an impression. He has to be thinking, "I've blown it." He plays seven under the rest of the way. He shot
Incredible.
69 with a triple, a double, and a bogey right out of the gates. At some point, you have to turn the page and go from, Jordan Spieth to this new generation. So McNealy played very well this weekend,
She did.
but it's still a bit of a roll of the dice because they're untested. I'm okay with it. I think these two will respond and likely respond well. The big question, obviously, is Keegan, and what does Keegan do with Keegan? A month ago, I was adamant he should play because, he was absolutely one of the, if not 12 best players, one of the six, five, seven best players. And they needed him, need his passion. He's the American Ian Poulter. He knows the golf course. He played college golf at St. John's. He's not played that well in the last month. I'll be okay whatever way he goes. Selfishly, it's a great story. If he does select himself, it could create some problems. I could see how it would create some issues in that he will be the subject of every press conference, and that could be a distraction. Keegan, and if it doesn't go well, it's the story that could weigh them down if it doesn't go well from the jump. That said, I think it would be interesting. The first since Arnold Palmer playing captain, United States since 1963. And we all know this isn't 1963. It's a much bigger deal. And so I think that's a hard one. If he does it, if he picks himself, the way I imagine it going is he sits out in the morning. And then he plays the afternoon because then he could survey the landscape, and then he could reconvene again with his assistants at night after he's played and assess what they want to do for the following day. So I think it's doable. I think it would be fascinating. I think it would be a great story. But if he doesn't, I would understand. I don't think this, at least for the moment, is the strongest American team. Things can change really quickly. They do have Scheffler, so start there. But Xander's a concern. Spahn, we think, is going to be very good. So this, he's the absolute breakthrough player of the year. This guy was like 167 in the world at one point last year. I think he was sixth, somewhere in that neighborhood. But he's never played a Ryder Cup. Conversely, Europe appears to be stacked, and playing, and their guys are playing well. All that said, we know how difficult it is to win a Ryder Cup on away from home. It's brutally hard. And Bethpage is going to be intense. So, but I think Europe's ready. I think Europe, I think the world of Luke Donald and our guy, Paul, my colleague, Paul McGinley. Paulie is as sharp as they come. He's an advisor, strategic advisor. They will leave no stone unturned. They in the strategy department, they will not be outfoxed. I can, and in the prep department, they won't be outfoxed. There's no chance. This is a formidable European team.
No question about it. Final question. It's always a personal one. I like to end the interviews this way, Rich. If you could have three others to round out your dream foursome, and it can be family members, it can be Arnold, living, deceased. Who would those three be, and where would you
Well,
play?
so since we spent a lot of time on Arnold, let's have Arnold fly the Cessna in. It's not a long
Love it.
flight from
Love it.
Western PA to where I grew up in Southeastern PA. We'll
Love
keep it
it.
a Keystone foursome. And then my late father and my mom, who's still with us, gosh, they loved the game of golf. My mom was good. My mom was a low 80s shooter, could really hit it a long ways. And the way I would lay out this round is the way so many were when I was younger. We'd leave the house in Allentown at about 4 in the afternoon. Everybody, put their day's work in, cut it a little short, summer day. And we'd take the 22-minute drive out 222 to the Berkeley Country Club. It's my home course in Kutztown, PA. Betsy King used to host the LPGA event. There's a wonderful golf course. Robert White, I think, was the designer. 6,800 yards rolling Pennsylvania farmland. At its peak, it was like a top 20 in the state. Fast greens. The 22-minute drive through the Pennsylvania farmland, rows of corn on either side. See it at 4:30. We played fast. So Arnold joins us. We play a little match. And then about 8:15, 8:30, we go to the Bowers Hotel in Topton, Pennsylvania, a little farm community. There was a great restaurant hotel by the train tracks, martinis at sunset. And we'll call it a special day. My father was the funniest golf commentator for sure in the family. Hilariously foul mouth at every shot that didn't go right. We had so many laughs. And so long before I got to Golf Channel, the game has been very good to me and to my family. Going back to my dad's range. The love for the game that my mom had. My mom, by the way, taught me one, crucial early lesson. I had 3 feet. We were on a trip at Hilton Head. I was 15, 3 feet to break 80 for the first time. And I looked around. Mom, dad, in hopes that they would say, great round. So I picked that up. Way to go. My mom said, you need to putt it.
Yes.
To quote Johnny Miller, I gacked. And then I pouted through dinner. so many good times playing. And I was in Allentown until my early 30s. I didn't get to Golf Channel until late. So great memories. And again, all of it will be spilled in the book coming out next year.
Can't wait to read it. It is a game unlike any other, isn't it, Rich?
It is. Kelly, you have probably similar sort of arc in the game from the time you were a kid, I'm guessing, right? I mean,
Very much so. Yeah.
it's your life. It's been your
It's in
life.
your blood, right?
It is. I don't know much else but this,
Yeah.
you know. I really, it flat out is, it shaped me, it raised me, and it's, you know, it's given me a life, given me a living.
Rich Lerner, this has been absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for being with us on Musing on Golf, and look forward to hearing from you at the Tour Championship next or this week, and then in about a month at Bethpage Black for what's going to
Wow,
be
can't
the
wait.
event of the year, right?
Yeah, I'm stoked. We all are. And Kelly, thanks. Congratulations on all your success. Thank you for
Thank you,
giving me
Rich.
the time, and I hope we can do it again.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much.
William and Harry has entered a bold new era, led by their new Lionhead logo, symbol of strength, leadership, and fearless ambition. Step onto the course with purpose, outplay the field, and dominate your opponent, all while wearing handcrafted shoes that blend performance, luxury, and unmistakable style. William & Harry offers custom designs featuring your club, company, or organization's logo, so you stand out with every step. Visit williamandharry.com and use code 15OFF, M-O-G, for 15% off. William & Harry, walk with the lion.
Rich covered so much ground, and he's kind of a tough guy. You know, they say a tough act to follow. This is not the easiest coming on after that interview, but a few thoughts that Rich gave in that interview. First of all, thank you to you, Rich Lerner, for your time, for your eloquent thoughts, and for really for what you've contributed to the game and to the enjoyment of the game for so many who've watched Golf Channel over the years. I really liked Rich's idea about Keegan Bradley playing in the afternoon of that first day of matches on Friday. So at least he can sort of have a sense of what's going on in the morning, being able to make the decision that who's playing in the afternoon. He's really going to have to lean heavily should he select himself as one of the six players to round out his team, really rely heavily on his vice captains. He has a lot of experience with those guys. And I still am thinking that he is going to select himself. I think that Rich, likewise, I agree with his thought that he needs to go young. You know, guys in Ben Griffin's playing really well. Maverick McNealy played really well last week at the BMW Championship. And don't forget that in 2021, the last time the Ryder Cup was played in the States, a decision was made to go with a rookie who had not even won a golf tournament on the PGA Tour. And the selection of Scottie Scheffler in 2021 ended up being a pretty good one for that U.S. team that really beat the living daylights out of the Europeans at Whistling Straits. And obviously, Scottie, now with everything that he's done. Speaking of, let's hear from Scottie Scheffler as to what went into that final round victory at Kays Valley in winning his fifth PGA Tour event of the year and the demands of that golf course and having to come from behind to get that win at the BMW Championship.
You know, this week was a good week. It was a battle all the way through. It was a tough day out there. The greens got really tough to putt there towards the end, and it was a challenging day. You know, I was starting four shots back, but got myself into the tournament pretty quickly there on the front nine, and did a lot of good stuff out there. Would have liked to have a few less mistakes, but overall, I mean, great battle all the way through. Did a good job of staying patient and executing when we needed to. Yeah, I definitely was sharper with the irons today. You know, in this game, you're always looking for a little bit more out of yourself pretty much at all times. And so I can think of a few that I wish I would have hit a little sharper. But, I mean, I hit some really nice shots. And I can't tell you how difficult it was to putt these greens late in the day. I mean, there was obviously, with it being bent grass greens, there gets to be, you know, a few spike marks, and they got really fast out there. And there's a lot of slope. And so they were pretty challenging to putt.
Yeah. And Scheffler just finds different ways to win, right? As Rich talked about, he has clarity, he has purpose. I'll say as well, he's going to need all of that. The United States is going to need all of that from him at the Ryder Cup just over a month from now at Bethpage Black on Long Island in New York. Two rookies are on the among the six who have made the U.S. team so far. J.J. Spaun, U.S. Open champion, and Russell Henley, probably one of the quietest golfers, one of the quietest outstanding golfers in a very long time. He's a terrific player, but this will be Russell Henley's first Ryder Cup experience. Same with J.J. How are they going to react? You know, how are they going to, when the anthem's being played and that first tee they've got to walk to and hit that opening drive, that's going to be something that that will be most interesting to see, because the Europeans are going to be filled with guys who've been there before. Their team's going to be rounded out in the next week or so. The captain's picks next, I believe it's next Wednesday after the Tour Championship, when Keegan will select the rest of his team. And I do expect, I really expect at least Ben Griffin to be on that team. As I mentioned, Maverick McNealy. Yeah. Again, look for guys who are playing well. The one guy who's, I think is a concern, who's made the team already, is Xander Schauffele. He's not even in the field for the Tour Championship this week. Not among the 30 who got to this point, not playing well. And that's a bad sign for a veteran player. So he needs to find his game. Talk about guys who found their game. I hope you all had a good chance, or had a chance to watch the U.S. Amateur at the Olympic Club in San Francisco, which will host a PGA Championship in a few years. They've done a lot of work on kind of upgrading, bringing it into the modern game, and it looked spectacular. And Mason Howell, 18 years old, a rising senior in high school, not in college, rising high school senior, has already committed to play at the University of Georgia with a 7-6 victory over Jackson Harrington, who is starting his sophomore year at the University of Tennessee. First time that the U.S. Amateur had featured a pair of teenagers, with Mason being 18, Jackson being 19. First time since Matt Fitzpatrick won the U.S. Amateur in 2013. So impressed by those two. I think that bodes very well for American golf going forward. John Daly's son, John Daly II, really impressive, soon to be senior at the University of Arkansas. He is he's got an awful lot of talent, and all those experiences for those young players to get that far in an event that is the event when it comes to amateur golf, the U.S. Amateur, to reach those points, quarterfinals, semifinals, and the rewards for a guy like Mason Howell, for goodness sakes. Invitations to next year's Masters, U.S. Open, Open Championship. Wow, great week, and very, very happy for Mason Howell. He's a kid you're absolutely going to need to keep your eyes on for a long, long time. Next week, speaking of guys who play at the collegiate level, next week, PGA of America professional Mike Small. Mike is will be our guest. Mike is entering his 26th year as the head men's golf coach at the University of Illinois, and I look forward to having Mike on that next week. Now, before we close, we go back here for a second to Keegan Bradley, and I want to play something special here. Back in 2012, Davis Love III was the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, and my late co-host Bob Bupka talked to Keegan early on in that year in 2012. Keegan was talked to Davis, and Davis was still a good player on the PGA Tour at that point. And so Bob wanted to talk to him about, well, hey, Davis, what do you think? Could you still be a Ryder Cup playing captain? And here's how that conversation went.
The way you're playing, it's certainly not a out of the question situation where you may play yourself onto the team. Have you given any thought to how you would handle that?
Well, I've given a lot of thought to that, because I'm never going to give up my goal of making Ryder Cups as long as I feel like I'm competitive on the tour. You know, I went out to Hawaii last week thinking about making points on all the lists that I need to move up on, and trying to win golf tournaments. So I think between Jose Maria and myself, if one of us gets hot with a putter, we might make our own team. So, but what I ultimately want is the 12 best players. And if I'm one of the best eight, come the PGA Championship in 2012, then I'm going to want to play because I don't want to leave a guy off the team that might help us win. And if that's me, great. If not, I certainly would have a tough time picking myself. That wouldn't look very good. But we tried to convince Tom Kite in 97 to pick himself. And if I hadn't have won the PGA Championship, he may have made the team because he was playing very well that week. And if I'd have been the captain in 97, I'd have picked Tom Kite. So it would be hard unless we had a mutiny on the team and they insisted that I played. But I doubt that would happen. But I would love to make the team. We'll cross that bridge if we get to it. But the PGA of America, I've watched them. They can run the Ryder Cup without Davis Love III for sure. And if we have good assistance and I'm playing great, that would be a great story for our team and for golf, as long as I got 3 or 4 points out of the deal.
Really special for me to hear Bob's voice again on that. And that was back when the U.S. Ryder Cup captain had 8 selections, as Davis noted. And Keegan obviously has 6 selections. Davis made a good point there. And that was, look, if I finished in the top 8, well, yeah, I'm going to play because I've earned it. And that may very well end up being Keegan's out, that the fact that he didn't finish in the top 6 in points, that maybe he might feel that he didn't earn it. But we'll see. It's going to be really good golf this week at the Tour Championship in Atlanta, and lots of decisions to be made in the next week by Keegan Bradley when it comes to the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Again, for my executive producer extraordinaire, as I like to call her, Jenna Self, Kelly Elvin signing off. Thank you so much for joining us on what was really a special, very special, Musings on Golf. Well, for the 2025 PGA Tour, it all comes down to one final tournament. And for Musings on Golf, there is no one better than Rich Lerner of Golf Channel to guide us through the Tour Championship and give us incredible insight into the game he knows and loves. On behalf of our executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you to another storytelling rich episode of Musings on Golf. And are you ever in for a real treat?